You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Jason Tatum, that's deflected and picked off Mosey. He'll take it in. It's a pick six and a touchdown.
The New York Jets select Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaw11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a special guest today, host of Bill's pre and halftime show, host of Food for Thought as well, Nate Geary. Nate, how are you doing today?
Doing great, man. I'm doing great. The reason I'm doing great is if you were on Twitter today, you might have found out that the New England Patriots are imploding from within. So I don't know how it could be much better.
Yeah, no, it's every single person in New England I talk to is like, it's an abject disaster right now, offensively, yeah. Specifically. Naming Matt Patricia and you know, losing Josh McDaniels, I couldn't have predicted that, and replacing him with two guys who are probably the two worst head coaches in football last year. You know, that's definitely always a recipe for success, and losing some of your better, weapons on both sides of the ball. But I want to quickly start with Mekhi Becton. I'm sure, as you just saw as well, the play was not the best highlight. Mekhi Becton seemed to be struggling with the knee. This is a guy that's coming off missing an entire season, obviously, with a knee injury that was supposed to be 48 weeks, missed the entire season. Off season, obviously, was overweight, all the whole nine yards, gets in great shape, everyone's pumped, working his way back, and then puts the brace on about two or three days ago and seemed to be laboring a little bit. And then today, second play of team, as everyone already saw, kind of gets his foot caught a little bit and just gets absolutely truck sticked by John Franklin Myers, which, it seemed like the Jets, I will give Robert Saleh a little bit of a hard time here coming out and saying it seems like structurally it's fine. It doesn't seem like a big deal. Maybe not the best use of words, just because stuff like this does happen. The Jets got tests done. It's feared it's much worse. Don't want to speculate on what it is, but it does look like, could be a potential ACL, MCL type of situation. Usually when your foot gets caught in the ground like that. Obviously, you've watched Mekhi Becton play as well. How big of a loss do you think for the Jets that would be if he's out? I mean, obviously, Dwayne Brown, could be coming in, but still.
Yeah, I mean, I think I look at it and it's hard maybe to – hindsight's always 20/20, right? But, I think Joe Douglas was pretty widely, lauded for having a really fantastic draft this last year. And part of that draft strategy was to believe in the development of Mekhi Becton. So not drafting a tackle and kind of sticking to his draft board and going with positions of need while believing in his future development. Obviously Dwayne Brown this week is, meeting with the Jets team. I would think that's all but a done deal now if it wasn't already. So I think for me, I think it's a big blow in terms of this was a really, again, make or break year going into year three of any contract. Is maybe a little, hyperbole, but I think at the same time, I think about, guys like AJ Epenesa, who's a second round pick here in Buffalo, right? Really a big make or break season for AJ Epenesa last year at Oliver going into year three. I tend to, watching the Bills development here over the last couple of years, I've sort of subscribed to this thought that year three players are typically, that's the time when a player, if they are going to be elite, or they're going to take the step into being a top tier, top five player at their position, year three is when that typically flashes. Josh Allen, Gabriel Davis enters that year this year. Dawson Knox last year for the Bills kind of has his breakout season. So you start to think about Deion Dawkins similarly for the Bills at left tackle. I'm trying to think of a couple other, Tremaine Edmonds, you know, I think that some Bills fans are still waiting for that to happen, but Tre'Davious White really took that step going into year three. It's that time in a player's career where there's really no more excuses. The development is either there or it's not. They've seen enough, you know, on field experience. They've seen, they've been put in the fire in these types of situations before. If you don't turn in that elite player by the end of your year three, it's typically not happening for you. So I think this is a tough blow for people that were still kind of holding out hope that he could be now getting moved to right tackle, that elite level bookend on the other side of George Fant.
Yeah, it's the Jets in a tough situation. I obviously reported on it earlier yesterday. The Jets met with Duane Brown Saturday. He was in building Sunday, got physical, met with coaching staff, obviously front office. There's a lot of interest there. The only issue is Duane Brown is a left tackle. And
yeah,
George Fant is far better at left tackle than he is at right tackle. Part of the reason George Fant left Seattle is so he could go play, compete to play, you know, get away from that. And Duane Brown obviously isn't looking to play right tackle as of 2 days ago. But at this point, you know, the Jets are going to have to figure something out. His price clearly just went up, though. There is no question about that. Kind of want to get a broader, you know, kind of Jets perspective. And then we'll hop around the AFC East a little bit.
Sure.
What were your kind of opinion on Zach coming out of year one? Did it change at all, or, you know, kind of steadfast with what you believe pre-draft and, you know, through 2-3 weeks of camp so far and, you know, kind of what you've seen, you know, whatever. Are you excited to watch him? Are you kind of down on him? Where's your head at with Zach Wilson?
Well, I think the important part for Zach Wilson is the continuity. You know, I think that was big for Josh Allen early in his career, having Brian Daboll, having that guy around, having Matt LaFleur, Mike LaFleur, you know, same guy in the building, the same voice in his headset going into year two, I think is a big thing for Zach Wilson. Here's the thing. I was not surprised that he struggled last year. A quarterback that was coming out of, you know, it's not a non-Power 5 conference, but, you know, the level of competition at BYU is not the same as it would have been in the SEC, is not the same as it would have been in the Big 10 or the Big 12. So I think for me, like I thought that was going to be a learning curve for him, but I thought more than anything, it was the style of play for him in college. He was the type of guy that he has the things you can't teach, right? He has those intangibles, the ability to extend plays, throw on the run, throw accurately on the run, have those sideline type, you know, we used to call it in college, you know, there's three levels that you can throw: tier one, tier two, tier three. And there are very few quarterbacks in the world, much less the NFL, that can make tier one or tier two throws 20, 25, 30, 35 yards down the field. Josh Allen's one of them. Patrick Mahomes is one of them. I do believe Zach Wilson is one of them. The thing that I think is going to still, at least I think going into year two, I think this is probably somewhere he's really looking to. And frankly, throwing with anticipation and being anticipatory thrower, I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that it could be taught. But I do believe through experience, through being in situational football, that allows you to understand when to uncork. A lot of anticipatory throwing is trust. It's believing in the guy that you're throwing to, that he's going to be in the right position, and trusting what you see on the defensive side of the ball, right? And in the NFL, coming from BYU, playing Houston, and playing some of the Air Force, right? You're not going to see the concepts at that level that you are in the NFL. So part of this is, A, trusting your wide receivers, trusting your pass catchers. B, trusting the offensive line is going to give you the time necessary to get to that, to the top of your drop and make a throw with accuracy. But three, trusting that you aren't being fooled by what the defense is throwing at you, right? And that's what the NFL, and particularly the Buffalo Bills and Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer are so good at doing, right, is rotating coverage pre to post snap. And that is a really tough thing for young quarterbacks to acclimate to at the next level. Tom Brady does it with relative ease because he has seen everything. There's not a lot you could throw at Tom Brady to confuse him. And I think with Zach Wilson, you know, he's still going to have to work through seeing the game from a pre to post snap perspective. And it's not just, hey, I'm seeing cover three pre-snap, like, let's ride. You got to be prepared for the chess pieces to move post snap. And I think if that comfort early in the season can comfort Zach Wilson, the problem is the Jets schedule is just as unforgiving as it gets to the first 6-8 weeks of the season. It's still going to be a trial by fire for him, but I'm excited to sort of see the intangible stuff with the weapons that I think the Jets really focused on adding pieces both to the offensive line. Hopefully Mekhi Becton isn't up for an extended period of time. You know, obviously getting Garrett Wilson, who I think was one of the best receivers in this draft, and I had him as my number two wide receiver in this draft. I liked Breece Hall a lot. Obviously, a lot of people made the connection of potentially could the Bills move up and draft Breece Hall or draft him in the first round. They ultimately didn't. And obviously, like I'm a big fan of Elijah Moore, the guy that they got last year. And I like what they did at the tight end position. I like Ty Conklin a lot. So I think, you know, and CJ Uzomah a lot. So I like the pieces that they have in place. I like the continuity in the offensive scheme. The question's going to be is, can he trust those three things? And be a guy that plays with more precision, that plays with more timing and anticipation. If he can find that, you know, I think there's a real belief in my mind that the Jets could take a step and be the third place team in this division.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of want to get your take because you see it a lot, and I know it's the easy comp now. It used to be the Peyton Manning had a ton of interceptions his rookie year, and everyone was compared to him. Weirdly, no one really uses the Matt Stafford one for that. And Matt Stafford actually had pretty similar numbers to Zach in terms of, like, I think he had like 9 touchdowns, 12 picks, and Zach had 9 and 13 or whatever. I heard a lot of comps coming out of Zach of maybe a little bit different, smaller, more athletic Stafford in terms of that, just a really good arm. And you'll see some stupid turnovers. You'll see some throws that, you know, maybe 2-3 guys in the NFL can make. But the new one, obviously, is the Josh Allen. Look, he was super inaccurate coming out and looked pretty awful as a rookie. And, you know, obviously he had a big jump. You know, everyone kind of forgets there was a year two jump there, too. It was before the year three, you know, nuclear jump to being an MVP candidate. Is it fair that to expect Zach could take at least a jump the way Josh Allen did into year two, where Josh improved a lot of stuff? He wasn't this super accurate passer still, but the touchdowns went way up, especially on the ground. I think he was like 28 total touchdowns and 14 or 15 turnovers, but the Bills were able to make the playoffs because everything around him improved. And then obviously going to year three, they get Diggs, and they were that one piece away where I think the Jets are hoping they can get to that, you know, level where maybe they win 8 or 9 games, they make the playoffs or they don't, whatever. They're not going to win the Super Bowl this year, but they get to the point where they make that one splash move that gets them over the top. Is it fair to expect Zach could at least make that year one to year two Josh Allen leap as opposed to expecting him to be year three Josh Allen right away, which is frankly not going to happen for pretty much anybody?
I think I am expecting the year two jump, a similar year two jump from Zach Wilson that we saw from Josh Allen. The thing that, you know, I'll probably hold off on is seeing that year two to year three jump. I think there's going to be a lot of teams. I think there's gonna be a lot of fan bases that assume that the year three jump from Josh Allen isn't an anomaly. And I'm not here to convince people or guarantee that it was an anomaly. I'm just not sure that that's something. We just haven't seen it really in NFL history before. Somebody who, you know, is a mid to high level 50% completion percentage guy go from that to MVP caliber. But the thing that I think you can lean on if you're a Jets fan, if you're a fan of Zach Wilson, is those extending plays. It's the ability to, you know, always sort of be in scramble rules. And I think with that mindset, there are things that Zach Wilson will be able to do in the league with the type of skill set he's got at receiver that a lot of other quarterbacks and guys without that skill set at wide receiver will be able to pull off. The question is can he have an effective enough running game, which I do believe they've got the pieces and the workhorses back there, and Michael Carter, who really, I think, is going to blossom into a role. And that's kind of where I want to see Zach Wilson maybe improve on this year, is maybe as it's less about, we know that those extended plays, him holding onto the football and making plays where a lot of guys can't do it, are there. And this is, listen, I mean, we're talking about this in year five of Josh Allen, drafting of James Cook, in wanting to incorporate the running back into the passing game. And Michael Carter is kind of poised to probably have that role. That's not to take anything away from Breece Hall as a pass catcher, who I think comes out of the draft as one of the better pass catching backs right behind James Cook in this last draft. But I think understanding, trusting that he does not have to score a touchdown on every single play in the NFL, patience is rewarded. So I think, you know, using Michael Carter, using these running backs in the check down game, understanding that, you know, on second down, it doesn't always have to be a first down. Give yourself a manageable third down situation so that he and the offense are in more third and shorts than they are in third and longs. And I think when those things start to happen on a more consistent basis, I think you will see a similar, at least numbers jump from Zach Wilson that we saw from Josh Allen going into that second season. The question will be, is there a playoff push in there? And I think in the AFC right now, and the questions I still have defensively for the Jets, I would think that they're probably still a year away from really that conversation. But, you know, I've said this before, and I do believe this. You know, I think if I'm looking at both teams, the Dolphins and the Jets, obviously right now we know Tyreek Hill is one of the best receivers in football. I like Jalen Waddle a lot. So I'm probably taking the Dolphins top two pass catchers over the Jets just because there's time on task there. But you know, you'd be hard pressed to find me and find other people that wouldn't take the Jets position of having Zach Wilson over Tua Tagovailoa. And most people know I'm not a big Tua supporter or a big Tua fan. But you know, listen, I mean, at the same time, I do believe that Tua is poised to take the step forward this year, at least in the stat category. But the idea that he's just going to be a year three Josh Allen step, the way that I think a lot of people are expecting Zach Wilson to take the year two step, I'm not buying that. I do think that the Dolphins are going to be find themselves in a position like, you know, the Washington Redskins at the time found themselves with Kirk Cousins, that I do think that that's kind of his ceiling, where I do believe Zach Wilson has that Matthew Stafford type ceiling, can be a guy that in the right situation and the right offensive coordinator could win a lot of games in January. So ultimately, if I was a Jets fan, you know, and I know that's the one thing that Jets and Bills fans can sort of.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Unite on the front of, listen, we all hate the Patriots, there's no doubt, but there's not a lot of redeeming qualities about the Dolphins either. So, you know, I think we can kind of collectively go hand in hand in saying that, you know, I think that the Jets are in a much better position at the quarterback position right now than the Miami Dolphins are.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just going to kind of get to, you look at, you know, we obviously talked about, we kind of joked about in the beginning, but what's going on in New England is, I think a lot of people are still holding on to a few different things. Obviously, look, Bill's one of the best, if not the best to ever do it. And Robert Kraft's one of the best owners in NFL history and X, Y, and Z. And there's a lot of great things they've done. And I actually thought Mac was really impressive as a rookie. I mean, I think he's much closer to his ceiling than people want to admit. But Mac can still get better. He can still kind of get, you know, better around the edges, especially, you know, maybe he goes from the, whatever he was, the 14th or 15th best quarterback last year to the 12th or 11th. Like, I don't ever think he's going to creep into that top 7-8, you know, list, but that's why the Jets drafted Zach Wilson, right? It was to be able to be, you know, you weren't settling for Kirk Cousins, which is, Kirk Cousins is great. And if he put up any Jets quarterback, if Zach Wilson puts up Kirk Cousins' stat line from last year, he will be getting a mega $45 million a year extension, as he should. But at the end of the day, look, the Jets need Zach to play well. He's gotten better every single day at camp. He's improved. He's starting to take the easy throws, the checkdowns, you know, he's completing passes, the running backs. And I know it sounds silly, but last year, it felt like all the hard things Zach did really well and the easy stuff he couldn't figure out. So, yeah. Look, I think the difference with the Jets, which, you know, I think they're at advantage over Miami's up front. I think the Jets have got, even without Mekhi Becton, if they were, you know, whatever, it's going to be Dwayne Brown, somebody else, you know, up front, they've got a really expensive, pretty damn good offensive line. They've got a great offensive line coach. Defensively, they've got the second most expensive defense and second most expensive defensive line in football, for that matter. How do you kind of see the AFCs playing out? I think you kind of hinted at it a little bit. You know, where do the Jets fall, I guess? And also, is it Buffalo, like, by 3-4 games in this division? Because I almost feel like every day that goes on throughout camp, like, I almost feel like the Bills could go easily 14-3, and this division could be a lot of 7-10 through 9-8 type of situation.
I do think the Dolphins are poised to take a step. I am not and have not been a big believer in the Dolphins defense. I know that they get a lot of flashy stats and a lot of turnovers, but I think they're going to miss Brian Flores way more than they're ready to admit. That was a pressure attacking style defense that was really tailor-made for the personnel that they had. Going to a zone heavier defense that they're going to be going to this year, I don't think you're going to find Xavier Howard having quarterbacks, you know, throw the ball a half second earlier, like they were over the last couple of years with Brian Flores there and that pressure style defense where they're blitzing, you know, 60, 65, 70% of the time. That's not going to be the case here in Miami this year. So I'm interested to see what that defense looks like when they don't have the help of, you know, 6-7 pass rushers at one time. And they're going to rely on, I think, pretty overrated defensive line in general. And I'm not a big Christian Wilkins fan. And so I think overall the Dolphins are poised to take that leap. Now, whether that's 9 wins, 10 wins, I think that's probably their cap, their limit. They could push for a wild card, but the AFC is just so loaded. I'm not sure there's two playoff teams in this division. Here's what I'll say about the Bills is I think the Bills very well might have the best defensive line in football. And I know that, you know, there are teams that might have higher quality players. The Bills from 1-8, 1-9 are the deepest defensive line that I've seen in my time covering the Bills, which is, you know, running on 6 years, but I've been a fan of the team for, you know, my entire life. And in the time, I simply cannot remember when they had, you know, off the bus Hall of Famer and Von Miller, who's still really playing at a very high level. Daquan Jones, in the interior coming over from Tennessee, finally solidifies their one technique position that they've really been waiting for to really release Ed Oliver and to really maximize his skill set. I think they have two of the better, if not two of the five best penetrating pass rushing three techniques in the league in Ed Oliver and Jordan Phillips. And I think everyone is going to know who Greg Rousseau is after this season. The guy is absolutely yoked and cut up. He is learning from Von Miller how to be a quicker, be a guy with a plan at the line of scrimmage and save some of his moves for late in the game and understand it and use the moves of the offensive line against them. So I might not be more excited about a player on the Bills than Gregory Rousseau right now from the camp he's having. So with that defensive line taking the step that it is, I think their offensive line will stay similar. And I think Gabriel Davis is bound for a big, big season. I think to your point, you know, I could see them winning 13, 14 games, no doubt. But they're going to have to get through a really tough stretch in the first 6 weeks. And as for the Jets, yeah, I do think that they slot kind of maybe even comfortably into that third position. I'm just not convinced. You know, I think a lot of people in 2020 after the Patriots went on that spending spree that, by the way, no one else did that in the 2020 offseason, knowing that the cap the next year was going to remain flat. They went out, they spent to the cap, and they overpaid for Nelson Agholor and for Kendrick Bourne, for Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu's been awful.
And if you remember, Will, he was named executive of the year after that year. And it was not for the quality, but rather the quantity of moves they were able to make, the amount of money. They spent more in free agency than any NFL team has ever done in NFL history in one offseason. And I think a lot of those moves have prohibited them from making quality moves this year when they needed a move at the offensive line position. Instead of trading Shaq Mason, you're extending Shaq Mason. And right now from reports in camp that, yeah, you know, the offense is struggling. And is it Matt Patricia? I think a lot of it is that they have a below average offensive line. So I think for me, the Patriots are likely going to finish last in the AFC. I want to reiterate, I really do like what the Jets have done. I thought that draft was clinical. I'm a big fan of Joe Douglas. I believe he's been, he's the kind of personnel guy that, you know, ultimately ends up being the kind of moving draft that you take your franchise from being a sort of perennial middling ground or perennial loser to a team that can start competing for playoff spots. So yeah, I think it goes Bills, Dolphins, Jets, and Patriots. And I think I can lock that in pretty close right now.
Yeah. I mean, I would tend to agree with you. I think the variables that'll be variables that'll kind of change that. Frankly, if Tua gets hurt, I'm not sure the drop off is that big as we've seen in the past. I think if Zach Wilson plays like the guy people thought coming out, or even close to not his ceiling, obviously, but takes a bigger than average step. I think the Jets could push for a second. I also think there's a world in which Zach isn't very good, and the Jets have a bunch of injuries, and they're still young, and that beginning of stretch is tough, and they end up fourth. Like, it's hard to tell, but I guess we'll kind of finish with this. Teron Armstead's going to likely not play 17 games because that's not what he does. Tua gets hurt every year.
And so, I'm not convinced Connor Williams is like some sort of pro center.
I mean, he was pretty high on the penalty list last year.
And he was benched at a couple of points at left guard, by the way. He's never played center in the NFL. I think that is not a talked about enough point. I love the point you made about Armstead. I'm a fan of Armstead. I just think at this point in his career, he has yet to really string together a full season healthy. Add in the fact that they changed two pieces of the worst offensive line that I think I've ever seen. They made AJ Epenesa look like an all-pro player last year in week 2, week 3. And he was never heard from again for the rest of the year. So I think for me, that offensive line improved marginally, but I'm not convinced that it improved enough for that offense to, and here's the thing, right? Like, I know you're on Twitter a lot, and so am I. Like, I know we keep seeing all these highlights of Tua dropping in the bucket and so on and so forth. And that's great on 7-on-7. That's great on 11-11 when he can't get hit. When you've got Von Miller, when you've got Carl Lawson, when you've got Matthew Judon staring you down, and has a free and clean shot, you're not going to have time to sit back there and uncork a 50-yard rainbow. You're going to have to make decisions on the fly. You're going to have to, and I say this too, is a guy like Sauce Gardner, a guy like Trey White, Kyer Elam, when teams are going to play press man against them and have bracketed coverage over the top, he's going to be forced to make window throws with pressure in his face. And 18 attempts last year of throws 25 yards down the field. And Dolphins fans will be the first to tell you that he had one of the best quarterback ratings of any quarterback with deep throws down the field, except for the fact that he had the third fewest deep ball attempts of any quarterback in football. So I think that there is a sort of a reckoning coming there on that offensive line. I just don't think they did enough to surround Tua with enough talent on that offensive line to keep him upright. And he's the kind of guy that has to stay upright. He's fragile.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, obviously. And I think we're all assuming Mike McDaniel is going to be a rock star when he might be.
He's never called plays.
Let alone a lot of locker room. And I know a lot of the fun quotes and quirkiness and a little bit different. He's a little bit different than your traditional head coach. I understand that. But I also think there's an adjustment period. Look, Robert Saleh was the sought-after candidate a year ago. And it took him, 8 to 10 weeks to kind of start to figure it out a little bit. And there's no shot at him. It's just, this is what happens. It's the NFL. It's hard. When you've never been a head coach before, it's brutal. So, we'll see.
I also think too, last thing, Will, and I mentioned Brian Flores. I think that people greatly underappreciated and disrespected how good of a coach Brian Flores was in Miami. And I'll even wear that a little bit too. To get two winning seasons out of that team, doing what he did, swapping in and out Tua he saw the forest of the trees with Tua. He understood that that was not a guy they could win with at the moment. That's why they went to Fitzpatrick. So I think for me, they're going to miss Brian Flores more than I think that they're ready to admit. And I think he'll be an NFL coach again sometime in the near future. But I think more than anything, Brian Flores is a damn good NFL coach. And, I think it's, trust me, that offense, the Chad O'Shea dual offensive coordinator situation was a mess. There's no doubt about it. That's probably ultimately one of the reasons he was fired, is he could not figure out the offensive coaching situation and surround himself with competent coaching. But I think overall as a head coach and situational football, and particularly on the defensive side of the ball, they're going to miss Brian Flores much more than they think they will.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just scrolling through. Mike Giardi, friend of the show, was like, his tweet, Mac Jones, three completions, threw one away, took a sack, had another throw broken up, not one completion beyond 10 yards. Second set, two sacks.
Not good.
Shot put it a ball into the face of more pressure. Another two incompletions due to miscommunication. When you try to buy at the dollar store when you need to surround yourself a quarterback with stuff from Bloomingdale's, this is what happens. The Jets have found that out the hard way. The Patriots have great, they've had a great defense for a long time. I have a hard time believing that, look, I said this, the Jets have no excuse this year. If they cannot win a game against New England, like, I'm not sure when it's going to happen.
Yeah, so, when it'll happen.
Yeah, right. I don't know when that's going to happen. As great as 2010 the playoffs was, that was 12 years ago. So would like to see that stuff change. But obviously, again, I appreciate you, you hopping on.
Absolutely.
Obviously, make sure you guys are following Nate on Twitter. It's Nate Geary Sports. Obviously, covers the Bills. Obviously, Food for Thought podcast as well. So, really fun follow on Twitter if you like hearing, if you like Nate getting into it with some Tua's trainer. It's a fun thing to have happen.
And here's the thing. I think for a long time, especially during like the 2015 drought Bills, 2015 and prior, I think Jets were sort of public enemy number one because they were kind of the same level as the Bills, like the Fitzy and Tyrod battles. But I think ultimately there's not a lot to hate about this Jets team and this organization. Again, I'm a big fan of Joe Douglas. I like Robert Saleh a lot as a coach, and hard not to root for Zach Wilson. I think he's the kind of guy, he's got the kind of arm talent from an entertainment value and perspective. There's a lot to like about this Jets team. So you won't find me crapping on the Jets as much as I crap on the Dolphins.
Here we go. It's obviously appreciated. Again, make sure I'm yours following Nate, or we'll be back. This will be dropping tonight, and then tomorrow Mike Westhoff pod will be dropping. Got some exciting stuff coming out Thursday and Friday. And I'll be at camp Wednesday for anybody looking for some updates and stuff there. Everything else, again, make sure you guys are following, subscribe, the whole nine yards, leave a review. Everyone likes to say my voice is very soothing, so we're gonna keep rolling with that one and go from there. But I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you guys later.